Let's take up our story today where we left off last time. Numbers chapter 14. The tour of the Promised Land has just occurred. The 12 spies, as I grew up hearing them described, went through the Promised Land, saw all of the wonders of the natural land, of the crops, of the arrangements. All of that was good. It was exactly as God described. But they also saw the people that lived there in big walled cities, and some of them were giants, and that was too scary. So 10 of the 12 returning spies said, "We can't do it." Two said they could, but the majority said, "It's impossible." And the people all lost hope. They all lost faith. They lost faith in God, and they lost faith in Moses and Aaron, who represented God. So that's how chapter 14 started. Then all the congregation raised a loud cry. The people wept that night. All the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The whole congregation said to them, "Would that we had died in the land of Egypt. We'd be better off dead, you know. Or would that we died in this wilderness," you know, during the last 18 months that they've been on this trip. "Why is Yahweh, why is he who is bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become a prey. Would it not be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And this is just crazy talk. There's no way in the world that they would be in a good situation to return to Egypt at this time. But they're not thinking straight. They're only thinking in panic mode, selfish mode, unfaithful mode. They said to one another, "Let us choose a leader and go back to Egypt." Now, they can be back to Egypt in 2 weeks, maybe less, depending on how quick they move. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the people of Israel. So they are humbled before these people, probably in prayer, because they know that this attitude is going to bring judgment. They know that because only in the last few weeks since they left Mount Sinai, a similar attitude has cost a whole bunch of people their lives. And now we've got an even larger group that's involved in this sort of rebellion. Verse number 6, Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes. So now we've got the older gentleman, because Moses and Aaron are both just over 80. We've got the younger gentleman, half their age, just in their probably mid-40s. And everybody that is brokenhearted over this rebellion, they're on their faces before God. They're ripping their clothes in sorrow, in repentance on behalf of the others. They said to all the congregation of the people of Israel, "The land which we passed through to spy it out, it is exceedingly good land." So it is exactly as God described it. "If he who is delights in us, he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey." So that's a matter of faith. God told us. After everything that he did, why don't we trust him? God told us that this is our land and he will bring us securely into it. You've got to trust him. Verse 9, "Only do not rebel against he who is. Do not fear the people of the land, for they are bread for us. We will eat them up," basically, metaphorically speaking. "Their protection is removed from them. And he who is with us, don't fear them." See, if God is with us, who can be against us? If God is on our side, we're always in the majority, no matter how many are on the other side, no matter how high their walls are, no matter how much armor they have, no matter how many chariots, no matter how much whatever. If God is the commander in chief, the other side doesn't stand a chance. Verse 10, then all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Wow. It's come to this. They would rather execute these two good men who are telling them to trust God than to trust God. They want to shut them up. Now, talking about killing the messenger, that's what they're about to try to do. But then the glory of He who is appeared at the tent of meeting to all the people of Israel. Now, we already know that the glory cloud, the column of glowing cloud by day and fire by night, is always there at the center of the encampment. The cloud starts inside the most holy place, just above the mercy seat, between the two cherubim on the ark. It goes up from there through the tapestry ceiling, and then above the tabernacle building. And apparently, at some point up there in the sky, it billows out into a canopy over the encampment. So that's always there. We know that. So this seems to be a flaring up of that glory cloud, or perhaps some sort of additional appearance of God's glory that is kind of separated from the major mass of God's Holy Spirit glory. And so basically, God just pops into their presence to deal with this rebellion that's about to murder two of His faithful young men, and perhaps they had intended to go on and do the same thing with His faithful older gentlemen. He who is said to Moses, how long will this people despise Me? Because God knows this is a rebellion against Him. How long will they not believe in Me in spite of all the signs that I've done among them? And He's been giving them signs and wonders in abundance for months, for about a year and a half. And then he does something that we've seen Him do before. He gives Moses a chance to assert his responsibility as intercessor. God already knows the things that Moses will say in a moment are accurate. God cannot blow these people out of existence and keep His promises. That would be impossible. But He needs Moses to stay the course as intercessor. Moses and Aaron are the ones that have to deal with these people every single day. So they have to know that it's worth it. And so God says, I will strike them with pestilence and disinherit them, and I will make of you a nation greater and mightier than they. So Moses, Aaron, here's the deal. I'll just wipe all these people out, and I'll start fresh with you. That's exactly what God said at the time of the golden calf incident. And of course, Moses steps in and asserts his role as intercessor. Because remember, intercessor does for both sides. He intercedes from God to the people, but he also intercedes from the people to God. So he represents both sides of the equation here. Moses said to He who is, basically, if you did that, then the Egyptians will hear of it. You know, the people we just got away from here last year. For you brought up this people in your might from among them. And then they will tell the inhabitants of this land, they have heard that you, O He who is, are in the midst of this people. So basically, everybody understands that you, He who is, are the people of the Israelites who left Egypt and who were heading toward the Promised Land, toward Canaan. If you wipe them out, that's going to come back on you. For you, O he who is, are seen face to face, and your cloud stands over them, and you go before them. Remember, every place that they travel, God's presence leads them. Foreigners would have seen that. Non-Israelis would have seen that as they went by. In a cloud, a pillar of cloud by day, and in a pillar of fire by night. Now, if you kill this people as one man, just, you know, wipe them out, then the nations who have heard your fame will say, it was because he who is was unable to bring this people into the land that he swore to give to him, that he killed them in the wilderness. So the rumor that will prevail is, he could get him out of Egypt, but he couldn't get him into Canaan. That must be why he wiped them all out. He didn't want to look bad, so he just killed them all. And that's not a good look. And so that's what Moses says, is God, remember how this will look if you did this at this point in time. Now again, I remind you, God already knows how this is going to play out. He's doing this for the sake of Moses. It is not dissimilar to what all of us have done for kids, or what was done to us as kids, when a parent or a teacher plays along with us. Oh, really? Maybe we should just, destroy all this stuff right here. Maybe we should, you know, just pack up all of your toys and ship them off to Africa. It's to make the kid come up with a better plan. Makes the kid suddenly snap back to the reality of the situation, right? Maybe those weren't the best examples, but you understand what I'm talking about. Moses is being led by God here to be a better intercessor. So, it says, verse number 17. Now, please, let the power of the Lord be great as you have promised, saying, he who is slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love, forgiving iniquity and transgression. But he will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity on the fathers of the children to the third and the fourth generation. Do you remember that? That was the way that God introduced himself to Moses there during the second 40 days on Mount Sinai, when Moses said, can I please see your glory? And God says, no, you can't see it directly, but I will give you a sense of it as I introduce myself to you again. Those are the words that he used. So Moses is basically repeating back to God God's own description of his character, his immutable character. He loves and forgives and has mercy, even though he still allows consequences to come upon the people causing the most trouble. And so there will be consequences of this rebellion, but God will have mercy and compassion on the people as a whole. Verse 19, please pardon the iniquity of this people according to the greatness of your steadfast love. Chesed. You know, the idea that God likes us, and he wants what's best for us, and he will even sacrifice in order to accomplish what's best. Just as you have forgiven this people from Egypt until now. And yes, there's plenty of examples where God could have really come down hard on Israel, but he didn't. And Moses is aware of that, and so he's appealing to God to give them more time to get their act together. And so God's going to do that. He who is said, I have pardoned according to your word. So yes, I am not going to come down and wipe them out. But truly as I live, and as all the earth shall be filled with the glory of he who is. That's prophetic there. That's a That's a future situation when Jesus comes back to a renewed heaven and earth, a new heaven and earth. It's going to be filled with the glory of God. So it says, as I live, and eventually all the earth is going to be filled with the glory of He who is, none of the men who have seen my glory and my signs that I did in Egypt and in the wilderness and yet have put me to the test these 10 times and have not obeyed my voice shall see the land that I swore to give to their fathers. So none of this generation that is alive right now as adults are going to be allowed into the promised land. They're all going to die out here in the wilderness. Now, some of them will die sooner than others because of their continued rebellion. But a lot of them will die normal deaths after living a fairly decent life in the wilderness experience. Because remember, they're not going to worry about where their food's coming from. They don't have to worry where their water's coming from. They don't have to worry about wild animals. They don't have to worry about their clothing or their shoes wearing out. They don't have to worry about getting sick. They don't have to worry about the heat of day or the cold of night because God is providing all of that. And He will continue to provide that, even though He's going to give them a long time out, basically a time out for the rest of their life. So God is merciful in this situation, but He will not allow them to get away with this. It was inappropriate. So none of these who despise me shall see it. Despise in the sense of blew me off, didn't trust me. But, verse 24, my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land into which he went, and his descendants shall possess it. And that is the wonderful story that Joshua is involved with later, where a man in his 80s now, Caleb says, I'm ready to go and take that land that was promised to me there at Hebron. I'm going to go and whoop those giants with God's help, and I'm going to make that promised land mine. So that's why God says, Caleb, trust me. So he gets a pass on this one, because he's one of the faithful ones. And of course, Joshua also gets the pass because he was faithful and he becomes the leader of those going into the promised land. Verse 25, now, since the Amalekites and the Canaanites dwell in the valleys, turn tomorrow and set out for the wilderness by the way to the Red Sea. So, a little bit of tongue-in-cheek there, a little bit of maybe sarcasm. Since the Amalekites and the Canaanites are dwelling in the valleys up there and you're afraid to go in, just turn yourself around and head south. That's the direction that he's describing here. Remember, they're at Kadesh, the wilderness of Paran, which I believe is about a midpoint between the northern tip of the Gulf of Aqaba, which is an arm of the Red Sea, and the southern bay of the Dead Sea. And so to head toward the Red Sea is to go back the direction they came from, back south. Verse 26. He who is spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying, how long shall this wicked congregation grumble against me? I have heard the grumbling of the people of Israel, which they grumble against me. Say to them, as I live, declares he who is, what you have said in my hearing, I will do to you. So now God uses their words against them, the very words that they spoke in their disbelief. Your dead bodies shall fall in this wilderness. So you're going to die in the wilderness, just like you said, might be better for you to have died in the wilderness. And of all your number listed in the census from 20 years old and upward who have grumbled against me, not one shall come into the land where I swore that I would make you dwell except Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun. So all of these people who grumped and complained, and their names are on the inheritance list. You remember the list at the beginning of the book of Numbers? None of them are going to get that property. That's why there's a second census taken in the latter portion of the book of Numbers. We see the adulthood number here again. 20 and upward is considered adult. And so that's who was on the list. And so all of those people will be dead before the next census is taken. Verse 31. But your little ones, you know, those under 20, your little ones will, that you said would become a prey, I'm going to bring them in, and they will know the land that you have rejected. So they'll get to grow up. Remember, somebody that's 19 when this is all over with is going to be 39. Or let's try that again. 19 is going to be 59. So almost 60 when they get into the promised land. So there's going to be a lot more people born during the 40 years that are going to be going into the land that these guys complained they'd never get to see because they'd be prey for the bad people. As for you, your dead bodies will fall in this wilderness. That line actually is picked up in the New Testament for a couple of places. Your children will be shepherds in the wilderness 40 years. Now, that's 40 years total. They've already been 1 year on their exodus. This is year number two. So they're going to have basically 38 and a half years left on a total of 40 years. They're going to spend 40 years in the wilderness as shepherds, and they shall suffer for your faithlessness, so they don't get to go into the promised land until they're much older, until the last of your dead bodies lies in the wilderness. According to the number of the days in which you spied out the land, 40 days, a year for each day, you shall bear your iniquity 40 years, and you shall know my displeasure. So basically, there's a connection between how long the touring around was and how long they will spend total in their wandering in the wilderness. He who is, have spoken. Surely this will do to all this, I will do to this, all this wicked generation. Let me try that one more time. Verse 35. He who is, have spoken. Surely this will, I apologize for some reason, my tongue is getting all twisted up here. I, he who is, have spoken. Surely this I will do to all this wicked congregation who are gathered together against me. In this wilderness they shall come to a full end, and there they shall die. So that is the punishment. It's actually not too bad of a punishment as long as you behave yourself the rest of the time. As I said, you'll have food and water and shelter and comforts and plenty of rest. Everything is being provided, and you don't have an awful lot of work. You've got to go out and collect the manna every day and do things to take care of your animals and stuff. But it's really not too bad of a situation. You just don't get to go into the promised land like you intended, as long as you behave yourself from here on out, which unfortunately, a lot of them won't. The men whom Moses sent to spy out the land, who returned and made all the congregation grumble against him by bringing up a bad report about the land, the men who brought up a bad report of the land died by plague before he who is. So the 10 bad spies, as we called them in Sunday school class, they don't get the rest of their lives. More than likely, they were probably in their 40s or maybe 30s, something in that neighborhood, that mid-range of adulthood. They don't get to spend the rest of their life because they caused others to lose their faith. they became bad leaders. And so they have to bear a more severe penalty, just like the principle is in the book of James. And so they are immediately executed by God. Verse 38, of those men who went to spy out the land, only Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, remained alive. Now, they've just gotten a good punishment. If they'd just taken their punishment and moved on, things could have improved. But they won't settle down. They make things worse. Instead of accepting their punishment, they decide that they're going to force their way into the promised land anyway. And this is how a whole bunch of the rebels get themselves killed. Verse 39, just to kind of set the stage for next time. When Moses told these words to all the people of Israel, the people mourned greatly. That's fine. They should have. They rose early in the morning, and then they went up to the heights of the hill country, saying, here we are. We're going to go up to the place which he who is has promised us, for we have sinned. So the next morning, after getting in trouble and being told to head south again, a whole bunch of these people decide, no, we're going to go and take the promised land after all. We're going to force our way in there anyway. And that is never the right way to do things. If you get in trouble, you take your punishment, you learn your lesson, and you move on. You don't start telling the person who's in charge, the authority figure, no, really, we need to do it. I'll do it the right way this time. I'll do it now. It's too late by the time a punishment has been handed out. And so this is the first big bunch that die in the wilderness, just as God predicted during the 40 years of wandering.